Okay, so to begin the material for today, so we're continuing, as we have been, this series that we began a few weeks ago on the 25 beautiful mind states. Now, we've been in this series for a couple of weeks now, and we've spoken about confidence, mindfulness, shame and fear of harming, non-attachment, goodwill or non-hatred, non-attachment and non-hatred, and the qualities of the mind, such as composure and buoyancy. And we are beginning a series on the qualities of the mind that derive from the meditation practice. The first two were composure and buoyancy, which we spoke about last week. And this week, we'll be speaking about pliancy of the mind, efficiency of the mind, and proficiency of the mind. Now, we began with composure of mind and buoyancy of mind. So these are five mental qualities that develop and deepen as we develop in the practice. So the first two, composure of mind and buoyancy of mind, these are the qualities that develop as a direct result of the meditation practice. And they come about as a direct result of what we call samatha, or tranquility practice. So this includes the entire spectrum of what we call the jhanic practices, which are called tranquility practices. So these come about directly as a result of meditation. Now, the next three qualities are pliancy, efficiency, and proficiency of mind. Now, these describe not so much a state of mind, but a quality of how the mind works as a result of meditation. So the first two were the direct results of meditation, and the next three basically are the results of meditation in terms of the healthiness of mind that we experience as a result of meditation. And they speak to the real importance that meditation has in terms of mental health, just basic mental health. You know, what does it mean to have a mind that is healthy, that is truly healthy? And that mind is pliant, efficient, and proficient. So these describe a healthy working mind. And of course, for these qualities to operate, as we've been saying, the mind must first be composed and buoyant, light and tranquil and peaceful, which comes directly from meditation. Now, when we meditate, we enter a kind of unique state of brain activation. And this is well researched in the literature, because of the way we focus our attention. The mental calm and clarity we experience is temporary, but the more we practice, this temporary state can become an enduring trait, resulting in long-term changes in brain functions and structure. This is a fundamental property of neuroplasticity. Now, we spoke about this earlier. Neuroplasticity, how the brain changes, actually physically changes, biologically changes in response to our experience. Now, in the past few decades, interest in meditation has grown in the West, along with improvements in science and technology, to measure the effects of meditation. So there are many studies now that show evidence that meditation supports different aspects of cognition, including short-term memory, long-term personal memory, cognitive flexibility, and emotional control. I received an interesting article from one of our members citing how meditation affects Alzheimer's disease. So any illness of the brain can be ameliorated through meditation. There's even evidence to show that mindfulness may protect us from cognitive decline as we age due to its effect on memory, attention, neural processing, and executive functions in the brain. So one of the characteristics of optimal brain functioning is what is called pliancy of the mind. So this is the first of the three characteristics, pliancy of mind. Now, pliancy of mind is called mudita in Pali, is a form of cognitive flexibility. So the word is pliant, right? So it's cognitively flexible. It is defined as an elasticity of mental factors and consciousness. Now, in Webster, it's a very interesting definition. Webster defines it as a quality supple enough to bend freely without breaking. I love that. You know, we often allude to bamboo in the sense of being able to move with the wind and flex but not break. So, you know, this describes pliancy of the mind, a quality supple enough to bend freely without breaking, adjustable to varying conditions or suitable for various uses. So it adjusts to various conditions and it can be used in different situations. Of course, the opposite is inflexibility and rigidity. That's a quality of mind deriving from habitual conditioned patterns of behavior that are conditioned through our families, our culture, our peer group, our society. We're conditioned to behave in certain habitual ways. Also fixed and rigid views resulting from our social conditioning. We're taught this, we're taught that, which is fixed. That is the way it is, and there is no other way. Of course, we all know this in our own way. And rigid forms of self-centeredness that prohibit the acceptance of different points of view or ways of seeing the world. This is the way I think. This is the way I see the world. This is what I think is right. This is what I think is wrong. And not being flexible enough to listen and accept and allow ourselves to be influenced by alternative points of view. And this is the meaning of acceptance, having a mind of acceptance, which is really the cornerstone of pliability. So one way to understand cognitive flexibility is as an ability to adapt to changing or unplanned events or circumstances. For example, most of the time in our daily lives, we have our routines, our morning cup of coffee, the newspaper. Everyone has their own unique routine, and most of us take comfort in the familiarity of our habits. Habits are not always a bad thing, being on automatic pilot. Our brains have evolved to operate that way for efficiency. So it's good to have certain habits, certain cognitive paths that we always follow. You know, for instance, you know, driving from home to work. I mean, you basically memorize that way. And so if you drive that same path every day for several years, you don't even have to think. You just go in a certain way. And the brain operates very efficiently. But we can get stuck in those patterns if we're not careful. Einstein once said, "The measure of intelligence is the ability to change." So it's the ability to be flexible or to adapt to situations based on the demands of the situation and not out of habit, just pure habit. Of course, taking a larger view, the whole history of human evolution or even natural selection in general, not only human evolution, has been based on the ability to adapt to changing conditions. Natural selection is based on the ability to adapt to changing situations. Animals or other species of human beings, like Neanderthals, and there were about three or four different species of human beings prior and during the time of Homo sapiens, were not able to adapt to changing conditions, and they simply became extinct. They simply went out of existence. And so the Homo sapiens were the ones who were able to adapt, through their brain structure and their ability to be flexible according to conditions. And it's that flexibility that supported their evolutionary survival in the world. So at a basic, very basic fundamental level, mental flexibility is key to survival, literally human survival and human evolution. So this is a fundamentally important mental characteristic that's important to understand and important to bring into our own lives, because we get caught up in our habitual patterns, our habitual ways of seeing things that don't allow us to be flexible, that don't allow us to be open and accepting of different points of view. And of course, our society today is a whole commentary on our inability to be open to divergent points of view. So I think this has a lot to say about what's going on in our society today. So can we switch from one way of thinking to another? Can we see a situation from a different perspective, like from the perspective of another person or from a detached, impartial observer? Can we be alert to conditions that might be changing in our lives? When you're flexible, you have the ability to find more paths to a solution. Einstein said, "You can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it." So we have to learn how to be flexible. We have to learn how to be pliant in the way we respond to our conditions and our situation. So this quality of pliancy, or mudita, or cognitive flexibility, has the quality of water. Some of you might remember in our previous talk, we spoke about highly intelligent people who have minds that have this fluidity, this ability to move through problems and to solve problems. So this quality really does have this sense of fluidity. Water finds many different paths. It finds ways to get around obstacles. It continues flowing in the most efficient way, the path of least resistance. But water, in the frozen state, as ice, can be very different. It can be very solid and very rigid. If it meets an obstacle, it can't move until it melts. So water, just like anything else, can also be not only fluid, but very rigid and very solid. You can't force ice to melt. You can't force someone or something that's rigid to be more fluid. So this is something to really keep in mind. Whenever we feel a sense of rigidness, whenever we feel a sense of inflexibility, it's about loosening up, softening up, being more accepting, being more pliant, being more open-minded to circumstances, to people, to opinions, to points of view that may not be the same as ours. It's not that we're going to slavishly follow whatever other people are saying or the conditions, but we incorporate them into our understanding of things and accept them, the positive influence that they can exert in our motivations and our actions. Now, when we're in a situation where things are not familiar, of course, our habits and our sort of automatic pilot work in situations which we are familiar with, you know, our job, our home, things like that. But oftentimes we can be in situations that we're not familiar with, and that can be a real test of our ability to be flexible and adaptable. Now, traveling, for example, is a good example. When we travel, we're out of our element, out of our familiar routines, and all kinds of unplanned events can happen. You meet events and circumstances that can be totally unexpected. So we're out of our element, out of our familiar routines, and all kinds of unplanned things can happen. Do we keep our cool and solve problems rationally? Or do we fall apart, blame others, get angry, and expect others to solve our problems? Oh, it's the TSA, or it's the airlines, or it's, you know, all these people, those dumb baggage handlers, you know. Things happen, you know, so can we just accept it and learn how to move on? Another example of how differently people can react or respond to situations is in the recent pandemic, of course. This is a huge, huge situation that confronted the entire world. Some people thrived by making necessary changes, and some couldn't adapt and fell into deep depression, and some even to suicide. Those that thrived were better able to adapt to changing circumstances and use strategies to overcome them and remain productive. Many people were able to take advantage of the changes that were forced upon them, accept those changes, and find some productive way of taking advantage of them to be more productive, to be more useful. Now, for example, in our case, because of the pandemic, we're now on Zoom. I mean, I didn't even know what Zoom was right before this pandemic occurred. And so we had to adapt. And the adaptation turned out to be very positive, very wholesome, and very productive. So there are ways of taking advantage of changing conditions that can be very positive and very productive. I'd like to share another story, a more tragic story on the other hand. I had a friend, some of you may know this person, who was a very caring, loving, and socially committed individual, very altruistic. And we all know how a lot of people felt when Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. I believe that was 2016, when he was elected. But this person was so discouraged, so saddened, and so devastated by Trump becoming president that she actually committed suicide. Of course, you know, this had to do with her emotional state too at the time. One can tend to become depressed or emotionally overwrought by very difficult situations. But it progressed to the point where she actually committed suicide. So this happens. This really happens. And this is a lesson that we can all accept and internalize into our own lives in terms of, you know, really assessing how flexible we actually are, how pliable we actually are, and how rigid we can be if we're challenged in some way, in ways that are not familiar or convenient to us. Are we flexible enough to accept the conditions as they arise and incorporate them into productive ways that actually can be fulfilling for us in a very productive and positive way? So this is really the meaning of pliancy, the meaning of flexibility, cognitive flexibility. Now, another positive aspect of pliancy, which we don't always think about, is that flexible thinking is the key to creativity. Creativity is really important. The ability to think outside the box, to come up with new ideas, and to make connections between ideas is essential for all creative people, including scientists, designers, writers, artists, musicians, poets, doctors, lawyers, anybody who's involved in a life of creativity and problem solving, which is virtually everybody. So we can bring this element of creativity into our lives through our capacity for creative thinking, for flexible thinking in terms of the way we approach and solve problems. Now, it's often said that many creative people may be of average intelligence, but they are able to be highly creative and produce great works of music, great works of art, great works of literature, even though they may not have extraordinarily high IQs. It's because they can see things that most other people can't see. They can feel things that other people can't feel. They have a sense of intuitive awareness that's not measured by intelligence. It's measured by emotional sensitivity, intuition. So these are non-intelligence sort of factors, but they're related to intelligence in the sense that they increase our sensitivity to the conditions that are in our environment and within our own selves. This quality of sensitivity, intuitive sensitivity, allows us to be more cognitively flexible in the way we view our situation. Creativity is not the same as what's measured in standard IQ tests. Children who score high on IQ tests may do well in school, but it's the ones who are creative who actually do well in life, because that's a quality that you bring into your life in terms of how you live, how you confront the conditions of your life, the difficulties of your life, in a flexible, adaptive, accepting way. So pliancy is really, really important. Flexibility of mind, cognitive flexibility. Of course, the opposite of cognitive flexibility is cognitive rigidity, which is found in a number of mental health disorders, including obsessive compulsive disorder or mental depression. A lot of suffering comes out of rigidity, our inability to accept change, our inability to accept different points of view, our inability to accept the realities of life. So that inability, that rigidity, can trigger depression, it can trigger anxiety, it can trigger fear, it can trigger anger, it triggers suffering. And these emotions can lead to obsessive compulsive disorders, mental depression, manic depressive states, all forms of psychological disorder. So rigidity really is the source of a lot of suffering. So being mentally flexible is so important from not only a mental but from a spiritual point of view in terms of the avoiding of suffering. We can intelligently avoid suffering by being mentally flexible in terms of how we confront our life situation. So the question is, how does meditation feed into this? When we meditate, we relax our mind and our body. When we encounter resistance, blockage, or tension in any form, we don't run from it. We accept it. We open to it with mindfulness, and we investigate it. By doing so, we're able to understand it, and through understanding, eliminate blockages and rigidity. Now, there's a whole wealth of experience in terms of the whole noting process, when we note things that arise in our meditation, how it tends to attenuate, you know, what we're experiencing. It could be if there are negative emotions, fear, anger, whatever we might be feeling. As we observe these emotions, as we investigate these emotions, by the act of investigating, we are stepping away from the emotions. We're not caught up in the emotions, right? Mindfulness is this ability to objectively observe the emotions that are arising in our mind and not being caught up in them. This is the defining characteristic of mindfulness. So when we're mindful of an emotion that's occurring, that emotion is not occurring because we're observing the emotion, right? We're not in the emotion. And this is the miracle of mindfulness. Now, this could happen just for a nanosecond. And if the emotion is very strong, it'll come back. But then if the mindfulness is strong, you know, we step back. And so we go back and forth. But this very back and forth process attenuates the emotion. it makes it weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. We're not feeding the emotion. We're not adding to it by building a story around it and institutionalizing it in our mind as me doing something or feeling something or experiencing something. It's just seeing what's arising. In the seeing of it, the very seeing itself attenuates, weakens that emotion until it gradually disappears. It gradually fades away. So the power of the mindfulness is extremely, extremely strong. And then, not only do we attenuate it, but if we investigate it, we come to understand how that particular emotion came to be. We start to see the karmic etiology, if you will, the cause and effect pattern that led to us feeling that emotion. And once we start to understand that, of course we understand how we feel the emotion because of our mindfulness, we can also understand going forward what it means to continue to have that emotion going forward. So this is a moment of epiphany. Not only are we able to attenuate the emotion that we're feeling, but we're able to see the effect, the karmic effect of that emotion on our lives, coming up to where we are and going forward from where we are. So once we start to see that, our entire relationship to that emotion is no longer the same. We're no longer controlled by it. It's no longer unconscious. It's now conscious. We're now aware of it. So the power that emotion has on us is no longer the same. And this is the dynamic of liberating ourselves from suffering. This is how this occurs, through this awareness that comes from mindfulness. So through the meditation, we're actually able to attenuate these negative emotions. We are better able to understand the causality, the etiology of how these emotions arise. And we're able to let them go. We're able to no longer be controlled by these emotions. This is what it means to free ourselves from suffering. And in doing so, we eliminate these blockages and this rigidity, this resistance that we might have been holding about any particular circumstance in our life. So as we do this, eventually our minds become more pliant and we slowly turn ice into water. A mind that was ice becomes a mind that is like water. So this is what pliancy means. Now, efficiency of mind is called kamanyata in Pali. And it means a mind that is working effectively. So pliancy means flexible and fluid like water. Efficiency means a mind that is working effectively with the body for wholesome action without struggle or effort. It's very efficient. It can be defined as a kind of adaptability of the body. Mental factors and consciousness and the physical body are working together, harmoniously together. So Webster defines efficiency as the effective operation of any system to produce an effect or an outcome with minimal effort and minimal waste. So the system is operating optimally. It's producing whatever it's producing, its output, and no waste and no obstacles in the productive process. Our human body is this. You know, we are a productive system of a spirit, mind, and body. So how can we operate efficiently in that way? Of course, the opposite is inefficient, ineffective, unproductive, wasteful, inept. So how do we operate with a mind that's efficient? So we want our brain to be tidy, orderly, and efficient. Brain health can be described as the preservation of optimal brain integrity and mental and cognitive function at any given age. So all of this is a function of age. When we're younger, you know, our optimal levels of mental functioning are are different from if we're 50 years old, if we're 70 years old, or 80 years old. So for any given age, what is optimal for us at that specific time in our lives? And the absence of any overt brain diseases that affect normal brain function. So this is optimal neurological brain health. Now, the effect of mindfulness in nurturing brain health in young people, research has shown significant positive changes in students after learning mindfulness. They are better at regulating their emotions. They have improved focus and attention. They have greater compassion, and they are more engaged in learning. Students who self-reported mindful habits performed better on tests and had higher grades. It was a tool to help them deal with challenges in school by reducing anxiety and giving them a new way to handle their feelings and emotions. It made them more efficient in terms of processing their learning experience. Now, it's also true that meditation improves intelligence. It's not intelligence, but it improves intelligence. One aspect of mindfulness is what scholars call fluid intelligence. Fluid intelligence. Mindfulness is linked to fluid intelligence. Now, fluid intelligence can be understood as common sense or street smarts. Common sense, just plain old common sense. There are many people who are smart, but who may not be educated. Even though they lack the education that others may have, they can still solve problems and reason about things better than many who are academically trained. This is especially evident among immigrants who can't speak English. They aren't knowledgeable about customs and norms, but once they have the necessary information, can make connections and see solutions to problems far better than people who are more academically trained. So this is what we would call natural intelligence, not acquired intelligence like through a classical academic education. That's what we go to school to gain, this classical academic education. But a lot of people have what we call natural intelligence, and it's called fluid intelligence. Now, of course, fluid intelligence tends to decline as we age, but research is suggesting the possibility that meditation can increase global brain efficiency and slow the decline of fluid intelligence. So meditation is a very powerful factor in supporting and strengthening our capacity for fluid intelligence. So it is possible to do something to preserve brain functioning through the meditation process. Brain optimization comes with a range of benefits that include enhanced memory and focus, decreased impulsivity and anxiety or reactivity, better mental clarity, more restful sleep, and improved moods. So meditation is very, very powerful. And it's an undeniable positive factor in our mental health, especially as we age. So maintaining a healthy brain during our life is a vital goal in pursuing health and longevity. As we age, neurological disorders and challenges to brain health increase. So understanding these mind states about brain health is really, really important. Okay, we have another section on proficiency of mind, but I think what might be good might be to perhaps hold this section off for next week. Next week we'll be talking about rectitude of mind. So proficiency of mind kind of melds into the next category, which is rectitude of mind, which then leads into right speech, right action, right livelihood. So we're moving in a particular direction. Remember, we're talking about how all of these qualities are cumulative. So as we deepen in our meditation process, we attain mental buoyancy and composure. We attain greater mental facility and mental health through efficiency and proficiency. And as that mental health matures, our minds become more, greater sense of rectitude of mind, moral, ethical clarity of mind, and it feeds right into right speech, right action, right livelihood. So this is how the meditation process changes the quality of our mental states, how our mind operates, and then how this healthier mind feeds right into a moral, ethical life of speech, action, and livelihood. It's a beautiful trajectory. It's a beautiful movement from the meditation process and how it transforms our lives. So this is a wonderful, wonderful teaching and a very, very powerful example of how our lives can actually be transformed by the meditation process. Okay, so everyone, thank you so much.